help you out a lot. And Phil was a great resource.
Hey, guys.
Hey, what's up, Phil?
Hey, somebody give me some thoughts on this whole concept of Healer Nation, where you guys fit in, the idea of consistent rates in the rate sheet, and now the idea of some consistent underlying principles. Somebody give me any thoughts, either favorable, questionable, contradictory. I just want to see where we're starting.
I don't know if you saw in the email that I sent that I was prepared to advocate for a client. I probably didn't say that. But I am advocating for a client who's going through a whole series of medical stuff. So this was timely for me. And I wasn't on the tail end of the call last time. I think I only listened to the first 30 minutes. But it was really poignant for me because when you talked about volunteering for the hospital, it really does put you right there in the conversation with the medical profession. If I had to do it a couple times, like I said before, and now I'm looking to do it with my client. So.
Wow. Give us some specifics. You know, what's going on with the client and what has been your experience so far?
Well, he's had ongoing back problems, so he's got some herniated discs. And,
did he come to you specifically for that? Because you're
no,
a medical exercise? No.
No, he's been a client since he came to the initial kickoff from the Slim Down 7 years ago.
Wow. Okay.
And then became a client shortly thereafter, and has been coming to 6 o'clock boot camp, you know, pretty much since then. And he doesn't miss because he said it gives him energy. He's a business owner. It makes him more productive. And every now and then, because he's 65 and he's really heavy, he lost about 50, 60 pounds with me. Then he ended up having gastric bypass, He had to sleep. And he lost a lot of weight, looking good, feeling great. Started doing jumping jacks, all this stuff. He's a big guy. And then you could see slowly but surely we'd have consistent back problems. And then just recently, his biggest problem is neuropathy. And then he seems like he's having some diabetic repercussions as well.
Okay.
So now the process of getting tests, and it's exactly what you're saying, because he just had to switch his insurance because he just turned 65, so he's got the Medicare thing going on, and he has to wait for the tests in order to get, you know, a full diagnosis of what's going on with him. But neuropathy is the biggest thing at this stage.
And what is the doctor saying to him, or why do you feel that he needs you as an advocate? He does. I'm just curious what's going on in terms of the dialogue.
He doesn't understand what the tests mean. So he's giving quotes regarding what the test results are based upon his interpretation, but he doesn't see how the tie-in works. He just knows that he works a lot, 60, 70 hours a week, and it's a real struggle for him to do it, and he's even given up camp over the last, like, 3 or 4 weeks. And you hear his dialogue start to change, where before if he had to take off because he wasn't feeling well, his knees were hurting, his back hurting, he goes, "I'm going to take a week off, and I'll be back." The conversation is not that any longer. He's really feeling debilitated and feeling confused because his body's betraying him. At least that's what he's projecting.
Is his A1C an issue? Is that what they're looking at?
That wasn't even the test. You know what? It's he just said that because he's had some problems with type 2 diabetes. I mean, it was on and off for a while. And then he was all the orthopedic tests. He's getting another MRI. I think at this phase of the game, it's primarily that.
Hmm. So how are you helping him as an advocate? Are you talking to the doctors? Are you just reviewing his stuff? Because, Tony, you see the opportunity here not only to be a good human being and help him, but you also see an opportunity to become what I call the pivotal player on his allied healthcare team. So there's an orthopedist. There's probably a neurologist, if not involved now, that will be involved. There's whoever has to give him approval to get it processed through the insurance. So there are a lot of conversations that need to take place. And you want to be careful that you don't set yourself up so he relies on you for everything. You know, you don't want to get the call, "Hey, Tony, can you call this number? I don't know what they're saying." But
right.
You certainly want to have a copy of every record, of every file, and go through with him and make sure he understands. And whenever they recommend a procedure, a process, a change, just tell him to run it by you. And it's not that you're going to give the thumbs up or thumbs down. You're not qualified to do that. But you're going to make sure he understands it. And that's what an advocate does. And that way he becomes equipped to make the best decision possible. And as you take on that role, all of his practitioners will rather talk to you because they get a sense that you get it, right?
Right.
Good. Good. And obviously he trusts you. He's been with you for 7 years. Where is the hope, though? It sounds to me like there's a defeatist attitude. He's getting lots of bad news and kind of bad physical news. Where is the hope? Is there any?
You know, that's what I've – well, the hope is that he just turned 65 and that he's living a good life. He is living a good life. He's got a, you know, a couple pretty successful businesses. He works a lot, but I think he doesn't really complain about it. He enjoys working. And I think that's the biggest part, that he's at the point now where he's debilitated in terms of what he can do at work. And to be honest with you, I haven't really had a direct conversation with him because he just sent me a text. And then he started, you know, telling me what was going on. So I said, listen, send me some more. This is before you even talked about it. I said, send me some more stuff. That way, at least I can take a look at it, and let me see if I can give you some clarity here.
Okay. I think, you know, with clarity, we always have to offer hope. Now, I say that not expecting that any of us is going to deal with somebody in hospice. I mean, there are times that honesty is, you know, the hope is that the next place is a better place, right? There are those times. But we're not going to run into that often. So if we really believe that the body is capable of healing itself, and we look at somebody who has allowed blood sugar, because we realize, we all know, that regardless of what they say, at some level, type 2 diabetes or even a pre-diabetic is self-imposed, not intentionally, but it was controllable. We know that. So at some level, he created a situation. Might have started with his parents. You know, nobody knew. They were just feeding him a certain way. And when it comes to orthopedic problems, a guy who has been carrying a great amount of weight, enough weight that he had to do something drastic like get a gastric sleeve, obviously he's put over the years a tremendous amount of wear and tear on joints and connective tissue. So nothing that you're saying is surprising when you look at the history. The bigger question in terms of hope now is, can you turn a corner? And if so, where do you start? And I'm not asking you to answer that, but I'm saying if you can now create some sort of the other side of the mountain, some sort of, let's get your blood sugar checked. Let's take a look at your A1C. Let's just get the numbers. Let's look at your glucose. Let's look at your insulin. What happens in that case is he feels in control, because understand what he is now. He's a victim of the tests. Now, I'll tell you this from my own recent experience. I think I told you that my AST, my liver enzyme level, was way, way, way absurdly off the chart, right? 2068. And then the next day it came down to like 1942. And then the next day it came down to like 1860. So I was checking my labs every day. I mean, I was in the hospital, but I couldn't wait to see them. You know, I'd go up to the desk. Did the labs come in yet? Did the labs come in yet? Because they're going down and there's the reinforcement. And then it gets to be about, I think, 315. This is how closely I was watching the numbers. I can tell you the dates and what the numbers were. And I think I come down like 315. Normal is about 20. But I'm coming down from 2068. And I'm feeling good because the numbers are going down. And then the doctor says, let's wait a week. We don't have to check them any day, every day now. Let's wait a week and get them checked. So I waited a week and I got them checked. And instead of 315 where it was the previous week, it was now 345. Now, no big deal, really, no big deal, because the difference is I added in life. You know, prior to that, I was just in bed. So when you look at liver enzymes, what you just ate, what you just did, how heavy you breathe, you know, all of these things count. But because we waited a week, I thought my number's going to be normal, right? And it went up. So I'm like, oh, shit. And I had a horrible day. I had a horrible day because I'm going, fuck, I'm getting worse. I can't believe it. Even with everything I know, my psychology entertained the negative talk monster, right? And then I realized I'm going to stop looking at my numbers. Like, okay, I got better. I'm better. I'm functional. I'm walking around. I'm driving around. I'm even, I go to the gym. I do these little 4.5-minute bouts on the bike. I'm not supposed to work out, but I got to do something. So I think of 3 weeks ago, I couldn't lift my head off the pillow. I'm not that concerned about the numbers anymore. So what I'm saying to you is, when you're fixated on the numbers, or you're fixated on the test, or you're fixated on the outcome, you know, my mom went for a mammogram a couple of days ago, and they said, we see something. If we see something, we're going to have to do a biopsy. Now, if you want to scare the shit out of an 80-year-old woman, you say that. You go, we see something. Yeah, we're going to do a biopsy. So she had to go in for a biopsy, and then they have to wait 3 days for the result. And I called the doctor, and I said, what you are doing now is torture. I said, I want you to realize you are torturing a very nice woman. So I do understand. They say 3 days, 3 to 5 days, they say. I said, I know it's 3 days, but if there's any way that you guys can get the results sooner, I'm telling you, you will save sanity in my mother. So sure enough, this morning, I got a phone call. Everything's normal. It was nothing. All right. So my mom is through the roof, jumping with joy. She's 15 years younger today. But this is what numbers do to people. So what I'm saying to you, Tony, is, you know, I'm going to look at the numbers with you. I'm going to look at the, that's good. Now he has an ally. But the next step is, now let's get him out of the numbers, and let's get him thinking about hope. Let's get him thinking about, what can we improve? Do we start with the back, seeing improvement there? Do we start with lowering blood sugar and not look at the numbers often, but see what we could do over the course of 8 weeks? You know, do we look at energy? Do we look at the way you're eating right now? Do we look at perhaps a way to reverse the sleeve and live a normal life? I mean, these are all just maybes, but if you could give him that, then you become the most influential person in his life. So it's just the next step. So the great thing is, you have the opportunity now. Now maximize it, because this will be a great experience for you. You know, you got to be, in a sense, the cheerleader. Does that make sense at all? Did I just waste a lot of breath because you kind of knew that already?
It makes total sense. It's really important to hear, but I get it.
Okay, good. All right, anyone else? I asked for any thoughts, any opinions on just not only the direction we're moving, but I gave you some specifics now. We're unifying with a rate sheet. We're unifying to develop a level of confidence that there's a value here that is consistent across the board. We're unifying with some unifying principles that will go far beyond this group. And I'm just curious how it's being received, if you guys are full on going, yeah, this is what we've needed, this is what we're waiting for, or is there a little bit of resistance still, or doubt, or uncertainty, or question, or even contradiction?
Can I jump in again?
Mm-hmm.
Because
might as well jump.
Why not? I feel 100% in, but I definitely, and I feel like I'm at the confession, in the confession booth right now, because I did compromise myself to get 2 new clients. But I did not charge the full rate, and I had to go back and practice it over and over again. Now, I'm happy I got these people, because I didn't go, like, that low, like, but I didn't abide by it. And in all honesty, I'm looking at myself in the mirror, and I can't even tell you exactly why. But I had someone else who showed up, and I recommitted myself, and I quoted according to the rate sheet. So, but like I said, I felt the need to confess that.
Okay. Wait, what's going on in the background? Is that somebody's GPS?
Yeah, it's my GPS.
Okay. Tony, I mean, it's good that you're being honest with that. But it is just, I told you before, you're a really strong guy, and you have, just as strong as you are, is your fear. It just stands out in front of you and goes, you're not worth that. You know, and the only way to overcome it is to just beat the shit out of it. So, okay, you know that now. You just had another experience where it just, you know, negative talk just tapped you on the shoulder and goes, uh-uh, no way, bud. And you just listened. You know, but, okay, the fact that you did it now, summon up every bit of anger that you can summon up toward that negative talk, because it's taking money out of your pocket, you know? And next time it happens, no matter what, speak the new rate.
Yeah.
Because I don't think April's worth more than you. I don't think Tasso's worth more than you. I don't think Jason's worth more than you. I mean, I think it's really just a matter of overcoming a fear that has habitually ingrained a response into you.
Yes.
And I could give you 500 reasons at this point why you're worth more, but you could come up with them too.
Right.
So Okay, good. So simply you had this experience, now just recognize it and say, am I going to do that again?
Well, no, absolutely not. But what was interesting about it, though, was when I quoted the new rate, this person bought. And so it was a test rate. And so when she asked the question, I basically said, I understand. Wait, hold on, guys. I understand why you might feel that way, but this is my rate. I'm totally worth it, and so the decision to go forward will be yours.
She
and
balked? Like she just said, like, tell me what you mean.
She stopped and she said, "Wow, well, that's a lot of money." And I said, "Well, I understand why you may feel that way," but I said,
what was the number? That was the number that she reacted to.
The rate for the assessment is $150, right?
Right.
Yeah, that's what she bought that. And she said, "Wow." She even said, "Well, I really want to get results. I just don't want to get robbed." And so I directed. I said, "Well, you know, I understand when you might feel that way. But if you know, feel free to go to my website to see my before and after pictures and see the testimonials for the people I've worked with, and then, you know, and the decision will be yours. Your investment will be worth it if you decide to go forward." And I didn't get angry, which was interesting because the other people that that I didn't quote the rate at were like, "Okay, no problem." And then this one bought, but the way I dealt with it was just simply moving forward. So it wasn't like I was saying I'm willing to compromise at that stage in order to get the client.
You want to stay on this for a little while, or you want to just move past it? Because there's a lot here.
I mean, it's up to you. The bottom line, though, is that she did sign up. So
she did sign up at the
yes.
at the new rate.
Yes.
Would you say, whether it's geographical or just years of experience, you're dealing with a price-sensitive market?
I think there is a price-sensitive market. I really do. I mean, and Tasso had spoken about it before. At least with the group that comes to the Slim Down, there's definitely price sensitivity, without a doubt. In the general market, though, there probably is. And that's one of the reasons why I said before is, you know, part of what my goal is to be able to determine to the person who I'm speaking to, to communicate what the difference is. Because when I get someone who's contacted me, even her story was, you know, was interesting. That it's like, well, I'm calling a personal trainer, and I know that I can get someone at, you know, whatever, $45 an hour at LA Fitness, and then being able to have that person understand that we're not in the same boat.
You know, I know nothing. About makeup. I have a 12-year-old daughter. Big difference between my 11-year-old daughter, who would just roll out of bed, didn't care what she wore, just go outside, jump on her bike, and my 12-year-old daughter, who can't go out without makeup. And not only does she put on makeup, she watches YouTube videos, tutorials, and she goes, "Dad, you want me to show you how to contour?" No, Brooke, I don't. I have zero interest in this. We'll go into the grocery store. She runs to the makeup. I didn't even know they sold makeup in Publix. "Dad, could we get this?" We're sitting on the couch watching TV. All of a sudden, she peels her face off. It's like some kind of monster movie. She's pulling from the top of her forehead. I go, "What are you doing?" "Dad, it's a peel." So we're walking through the mall. And the very pretty Israeli girl, Rachel Herman, comes walking over to me, and she goes, "Hi, Dad, you want something for your daughter?" And I said, "What?" And she goes, "She has beautiful skin." I said, "Yeah." She goes, "We want to keep it that way." how old do you think I am? I go, oh, I'm never going to answer that question for a woman. She goes, no, you could just say anything you want. I said, 22. She takes out her phone and she shows me a picture of her, and she's got like this horrible acne. I mean, it was really like a infomercial, you know. She's a really good salesperson. And she goes, this was me at 29. Look at me at 30. And now Brooke is like, you know, she's eyeing the cart. So this is apparently mud and clay from the Dead Sea with special salts. And so she goes, I'll do a free sample on the two of you. I go, no, I don't need it. She goes, no, you need it around your eyes. I go, no, I don't need it. She goes, do you always want to look old? I go, listen, I'll hire you as a salesperson, but I don't need it. There's nothing you could say that will make me need this, but if you want to do it for my daughter. All right, so she finishes, and my daughter loves it, and her skin is all smooth. And she goes, okay, do you want it? And I go, how much is it? And she goes, $35. I go, yeah. So she takes out this very fancy box, and she wraps it in a ribbon, and she puts it in a bag, and she hands it to me, and I hand her the credit card, and she rings it up for $140. I go, wait. What are you doing? And she goes, oh, well, you can't use this product by itself. See, when I took it off, I had to use the remover. So it's $35 for the product, and then it's $35 for the remover, and it only lasts 15 days, so I'm giving you a 30-day supply. So you know what I asked, Tony? What do you think I asked?
Afterwards, what you asked is, does she need a 30-day supply? I have not.
Well, here's what I asked. Because it really, the likelihood of me buying this was pretty close to zero. I would spend $35, which is what I ended up doing. But this was the question I asked. Why is this worth $140? You tell me why. I said, because I can go into any of these stores, and they're going to tell me their makeup does the same thing. I said, I don't know anything about makeup, but if I take the next hour and I shop around, I guarantee I could get something for $35 that they'll tell me it does the same thing. Why is this worth it? And the reason I told you that long story is because what you did is you went into reaction mode and you felt you had to rationalize. Now, it's not bad. I understand she bought. But it's still your feeling of a need to justify. You're like, well, go to my website, check it out. If you don't believe me, you can look at the testimonials. You know. So what you're kind of saying is, I need more evidence because I don't fully believe in explaining this to you right now, right here. But I have evidence. Like, go to my site, check it out. If you don't think it's worth it, make another decision. And I think all you have to do in a case like that, honestly, is answer the question she's really asking. Why is it worth that? Because you know what? She knows as much about what the assessment is as I know about makeup. And all this reveals to me is the same thing. It's you're not yet confident. So I'm really, really glad you shared that, because all of this gives insight into this very heavy struggle that you have in raising your own bar. And, you know, you've shared some things in the past where you went through some loss and having to support your family, your kids. It all makes sense. But now it's just a matter of just blowing past it. So, you know, if you take a breath and you go, all she really did when she balked, she didn't challenge you, she didn't fight you, she didn't do anything other than ask the question, why is it worth it? She might not have said those words, but that's really what she's asking. And I think you, a confident Tony, can explain it to her in 3 minutes and doesn't need her to go home, think about it, you know, contemplate it, see if she wants to make another choice. And this is really good because you're only going to get better and better and better. And when you move that bar, man, you're going to blow it so far out of the way. You know, one day Tony's going to go, why are you guys only charging $6,000? What's wrong with you people? But, you know, for now, it's just that same thing. And it becomes very obvious when you kind of share these experiences. So these are the things you just need to practice is, you know, what if somebody says no? What if they go, that's too expensive? Like, all that is the, you know, in sales, that's simply the first objection. That's nothing, right?
Yep.
That's expected.
And I get that, you know, and part of me was like, I told myself that I was never going to, you know, have to explain or justify, and I found myself justifying it, but I said, you know, this is just part of the learning experience. I'm, you know, in this, I'm like an infant. And, you know, I'm going to fall a few times before I walk, but I'm going to keep crawling and keep making it happen. So I just want
to... you almost want to build in a trigger. Like, you almost want to pinch yourself, like, on the back of the thigh, because you'll catch yourself doing it, you know? Like, you almost want to go, oh, well, yeah, and then pinch yourself and go, hold on. Let me explain to you what you're going to get for $150. Because once you open that door for yourself, you'll do such a beautiful job, they'll almost want to pay you more. So you're almost there. You're like knocking on the door. You just got that fear, negative talk monster that's still a little more powerful. And you just got to beat the shit out of it. That's it.
Well, Phil, you think, is it better to go towards, in that situation for Tony, explaining what is involved with the intake, or more about getting her emotional about her needs?
It's both. It's a dialogue. So, you know, if somebody says to me it's too expensive, I'd go, why do you say that? That's where we start, and that answers your question, Jason. Because if she goes, I never paid that much for any fitness thing before, I go, okay, well, tell me what you've achieved from all those things that you paid less for. Nothing. Okay.
Gotcha.
So let's think about where you were robbed, right? Were you robbed when you paid people less money and got nothing, or when you invest $150 in a true professional, the guy who has won awards, recognized as a top trainer on Staten Island, understands your situation, is going to take you through a full assessment, really make specific notes mentally and write them down, and from that give you direction that will completely change your life. Where's the robbery? You tell me which one is the robbery. You know, but by asking her why, why would you say that's expensive? It's almost like Tony should be in disbelief. Like, huh? Right? It's expensive. You know, I'm showing you a Mercedes here for $5,000, and you're telling me it's expensive. Clearly, you don't know what a Mercedes is, right? That's really the healthy, confident attitude, not an arrogance, but it's just like you don't yet understand. So tell me why you're saying that's expensive.
Gotcha. That makes sense. I like that.
Good. And I'm glad you asked that question. Okay. Thank you, Tony. I always appreciate when you're willing to just kind of, you know, be transparent and talk about things like that, because I think it helps everybody.
Got it.
All right. Let me solicit one more person just to share opinions on where we're going, the idea of the unified rates, the idea of now laying out some principles that become also universal, not only to us, but to everybody who becomes a part of this Healer Nation, which I believe will be a significant number over the next year and a half. I've been having some incredible meetings with doctors and people and yoga people and naturopaths and healers, and I'm kind of asking different questions and getting different insights, and I feel better than ever about moving this thing forward and you guys really being a center of it. But there has to come a point that we're just there. There has to come a point that it's no longer, you know, me lifting and lifting and lifting. It's just we're all there. So that's what I'm looking for. Does anybody feel like, I still don't really have the belief that we can do this? Or when you talk about all this money, $6,000, it's a nice thing to imagine, but I don't know that I can do it. Or, you know, yeah, I'm getting closer. I'm feeling it. You know, somebody other than Tony, just give me some feedback.
I'll go, Jason. I feel that I'm there, Phil.
So you're already asking for $6,000, and you're learning that people say yes.
Yeah, and it's not like I'm not having to do anything more than I ever did before as far as, quote-unquote, selling myself. It's just, here's my rates. So I feel like my mindset is there. Like I'm there. I just, the way I ask that question, is that sometimes I feel like I don't know how to use this awesome thing that I have to its fullest potential yet, and that's kind of where I'm trying to figure out how to use it. But as far as mindset goes and value, I've definitely turned the corner. I'm living in a new place completely as far as rates and value and all that stuff.
And how nice is it to just collect $6,000 and feel good about it? Like, how nice is that to just realize this is clearly your value because somebody just gave it to you and you feel good about it? Right? You're not nervous. You're not uncomfortable. You're not going, oh, no, what if they find out that I'm not really worth it? It's just a nice feeling to get that. So that in itself reinforces your confidence. And I think Tony's always said, you know, as soon as I get paid that much, then I'll believe it. But that, of course, is the great catch-22, is, you know, until you believe it, you're not going to get paid that much. And I think Jason was an example of that. You saw his belief elevate, but now that he's getting it, you hear the difference. He's going, yeah, I'm there. Like, there's no battle right now. Jason, let me ask you this. What are you delivering for $6,000?
Well, I'm taking them through the live program, one-on-one.
Over how much time?
We're doing it in 10 weeks, 11 weeks to do the intake.
Now, you offered that in the past for $1,800?
Yeah, we started that, last March was the first time we offered it for $1,800, and we got...
How did it become worth so much more?
Because I believed in it, and I actually got out of my own way.
And you have evidence, and you know without any question that it changes lives.
Right.
And you know that you're capable and confident, and you don't need anyone else to intervene. And if it's just you and the client, you still got it.
What's funny, Phil, is I'm actually, it's a physician. She's a family physician, so she knows some stuff. And I have, in the past, I would have been nervous to try to really impress her. And I'm not at all. And I'm just delivering what I've been delivering, and she's blown away by it. And almost like she's someone who doesn't know anything about wellness and health, even though she does. I feel...
Correct. She knew nothing. I'm sure she knew nothing about the parasympathetic recovery system and CRP. Nothing.
None. And she gives advice to her patients every day on health and weight loss. So I'm really excited the opportunity to help her out and really open her eyes as far as this stuff goes. But I'm not nervous at all with it.
And this is what I've been telling you guys for so long, is when you actually do it, you're going to find the physician like everyone else. You had this fear of what if people confront me with questions and I don't know the answers, and now you're finding it's the opposite. You're finding what I've learned. The doctors don't know. That doesn't mean there's no doctor who knows. But when you look at the typical physician, they're not taught any of this. I'm going to share with you something I shared before, but you might hear it through different ears right now. One of the points that allowed me to start to win over a room full of medical doctors, a room, when I'm standing in front of, you know, 50, 60, 75 doctors, and they're all kind of skeptical because the personal trainer is speaking. One of the things that got me to get their full attention is, how do you test for type 2 diabetes? And I have shared this before, but I want you to hear it now because, again, you might not have fully internalized it. And the answer is, they look at blood glucose, and now they look at A1C, which is giving us not a snapshot, but more of a how is blood sugar behaving over a three-month period. Now, I'm going to go off on a tangent, and I'm going to come back to the simplicity of it. But let's say that every single day somebody comes home from work, and they eat a bowl of ice cream, and before bed they have some Oreo cookies, and they get up in the morning, and they have a packaged oatmeal with maple syrup. Their A1C, if they do this for 3 months, is going to be high. Because, again, it's looking at how their blood sugar has behaved over time. So what they've done over time is they have elevated their own blood sugar. So let's say it's 6.4, which would be just about borderline diabetes. And I don't like to get into the numbers because I never want you guys to diagnose, but just as a reference. So they would look at that if they're using this as a gauge. They're going to go, oh, you're pretty close to diabetic. We got to do something. We're going to get you on some meds. Now, that's typically where they will go. The more progressive doctors will say you should go see a nutritionist. But the doctor won't know how to recommend the nutrition program. They'll go, you should exercise. You should walk. But that's the extent of it. So they see the number. They associate the number with disease. And they go to the med. Now, let's say that you have this scenario, right? Here's somebody who for 3 months ate sugar throughout the day, spiked their own blood sugar, took a look at the reading, which is an average in a sense, and of course it's showing a high number. Now, let's say that same person is supposed to go for a fasting blood test to see if they're diabetic on Friday. The doctor says, on Friday, we're going to get you a glucose test, not the A1C. We're going to get you a glucose test. Glucose test is a snapshot, is a moment. It's where's your blood glucose right now, right? So the doctor says, we want to see if you're diabetic, so on Friday, we're going to send you for a fasting test. And it's Monday. And now the person gets nervous, so they don't have the oatmeal, and they don't have the ice cream, and they don't have the cookies. And they don't have the oatmeal, and they don't have the ice cream, and they don't have the cookies. And instead, they have eggs in the morning. They have a salad with some avocado and walnuts for lunch. They have a piece of fish and brown rice for dinner because they're nervous about the test. Now they go for the glucose test on Friday, and their glucose is 85. Now, again, same person, right? Two different scenarios, same person. Does that person have diabetes?
Not at that moment, they don't.
Well, do they have a diabetic condition? Do they need to be medicated? Because again, that's the immediate go-to.
They don't need to be medicated. They need to change the lifestyle permanently.
But do they have diabetes? Because diabetes is a disease. It is a specific disease.
I'd say no.
Any other opinions?
No, they don't.
They don't. But didn't the first scenario reveal clearly that they have diabetes?
I don't know. So I would say that they have diabetes if they're living the lifestyle of a diabetic, which means it would be reversed by them making those appropriate changes.
All right. So I want you guys to really understand this. So please, you know, stop me, or if you want to argue it, we could argue it. If somebody has diabetes, that means their insulin, and let's move, type 1 means they're not producing insulin, but type 2 diabetes means their insulin is not doing the job of lowering blood sugar. Right? If I eat a bowl of ice cream right now, and my pancreas is reacting to the ice cream, but I go check my glucose 10 minutes later, will my glucose be high?
Most likely, yes.
Yes. If I eat a bowl of ice cream now, I'm going to get an immense blood sugar spike. It's not that my insulin isn't working. I'm just in that window of it hasn't done the job yet, right? So I will have high blood sugar. So if I do that 3 or 4 or 5 times a day, what will happen to my blood sugar 3 or 4 or 5 times a day, obviously?
It'll spike.
So if with that, we're looking at an average, would the average be normal or high?
It would be high. If you're doing it 5 times a day, it would be high.
It would be high. But if my insulin is working, do I have diabetes? Diabetes
no.
means your insulin's not working.
No, you don't.
I don't. So I want you to understand this. So it is very possible for somebody who eats a lot of sugar to not have diabetes because they have a healthy metabolism. They have healthy receptor sites. Genetically, they exercise, they take care of themselves, they just happen to have a taste for sugar. So it is possible for somebody to eat a lot of sugar, manipulate the hemoglobin A1C, not on purpose, but that's what they're doing, and get a reading that suggests they're diabetic, even if they're not. Because if that same person doesn't get a hemoglobin A1C test, but they've stayed away from sugar for a week and they get a glucose test and their glucose is normal, they don't have diabetes. If they had diabetes, their glucose would not be normal. Does that make sense?
Yep.
So I'm sharing this with you because here's a very simple scenario that allowed me to get doctors' attention. So no longer am I just a personal trainer on the stage. They start to scratch their head and pay attention. So putting A1C aside, I would say, okay, hey, now, audience, and I'll put some up on the screen that shows numbers, and I go, if somebody comes to you and you do some blood work and you just do a complete panel and we see glucose of 122, what are you guys going to do? And they're going to go, was it a fasting test? And I'm going to go, no, it was not a fasting test. And then, of course, they're going to go, okay, we have to do a fasting test. Great. So now I bring up the next slide. I go, now here's the fasting test. Glucose, 124. What do we do? And they go, metformin, glucophage. That's the paradigm, okay? They're all, so, and I, again, I'm just telling you that because sometimes they'll look at hemoglobin A1C, but even that is flawed. That's why I mentioned that. But let's just be simple. So they're looking at glucose, and they're going, oh, glucose is high, so this person needs a medication to draw it down. This person has clearly diabetes, and they need a medication. And then here's the question I ask the room. Do you check insulin? And the answer is no. The more progressive doctors do, functional medicine doctors do, but on a conventional panel, it's not included. They don't check insulin. Now, why is this significant? Because if insulin is low and blood sugar is high, that is a very different condition than if insulin is high and blood sugar is high. One of them is type 1 diabetes. It is a broken pancreas. It is a flawed pancreas. And if somebody has that condition and they're simply giving them glucophage, they're hurting them. The other scenario, if insulin is high and blood sugar is high, that means they have insulin resistance, which is fixable through what, guys? Through what?
First training, yeah.
Yeah, it's through lifestyle, through changing the way you eat and changing the way you move. So this is the flaw of the medical testing system, is they're just giving people labels and giving them drugs. There's no hope. That's what they do. So when the doctors hear that, they, because again, they have the reference for it, they think about it, they go, holy shit, why didn't I ever think of that? That's absolutely right. If we're not checking insulin, how could we know if it's type 1 or type 2? They can't. It's just a global paradigm that they all follow. So I could give you hundreds of examples of this, where the testing systems are flawed. Now, again, you don't need to know all this. I'm not asking you to challenge doctors. But this is what our population is being exposed to. They're going to the doctor, they're getting a test, they're given a drug. And with that, they're given a label. There is no healing involved. That has nothing to, where's the healing? Now, if I ask any personal trainer, even if they're not educated in this, do you believe the body can heal itself? They will all say yes. If I ask doctors that, I don't get such an easy yes. I get a qualified yes, unless there's a disease, or if we get the resistance out of the way, or if we do the right surgery, or if we get them on the right medication, which kind of means no, right? I mean, if you're adding in all those qualifiers, you're kind of answering my question, well, you really don't believe the body can heal itself. I am now living proof that my body healed itself without any medical intervention. I didn't need to go through this. I would have made the same statement, but I'm just saying it shows the difference. Now, the trainers believe that the body can heal itself, but they're not equipped. They don't have enough of a paradigm to defend it. They don't have enough of an understanding. The doctors who have an extreme understanding have developed an understanding far beyond the roots of medicine. They forgot. They forgot that the body can heal itself. So this is why I developed these 42 principles. These are 42 principles that in the hand of any healer, the answer or the point to is in here. Maybe over time you guys will come up with a 43rd and a 44th, but I'm telling you it's pretty comprehensive. And if we develop a group of doctors, trainers, health practitioners, naturopaths, homeopaths, massage therapists, psychologists, psychiatrists, who start to live and practice by these 42 principles, then we truly become united. Because you can't omit any one. Every one is a part of the whole. You can't omit any one. So has anybody had a chance to glance at them or read through them, and did anything jump out at you at all? Because I don't want to spend the call going through all 42, but you know, we'll highlight some. And I just wondered if anybody had any thoughts or questions or read through it, or there was something that just sort of caught your attention. Silence?
I haven't got a chance to read through all of them. I've actually already started using some of them with clients and found it to be very powerful in explaining points of the health continuum, even to the physician client that I have, and I think they're awesome. Like, to me, like, this is so much meat and depth behind each point, and I'm able to connect the points and how they tie together and all that stuff. I haven't got through all of them yet, but I'm excited to read through them this week, and I'll have time.
I think yeah, and great. I don't think it's a quick read. I think it's a sort of focusing on one, and everyone will relate to one or possibly two corners of the triangle. So everyone will relate to mind or spirit or CI3, brain, immune system, or gut. But it covers all the bases. So, you know, in the past, when you guys felt like, well, what if somebody asked me a question that I can't answer? You can answer it right here. So what I would ask you guys is, if you're comfortable with the rate sheet, which it sounds to me like most of you are, haven't heard from Patrick. I know April's comfortable with it because she's already used it and charged appropriately. I haven't heard from Tammy yet in terms of just the certainty of a comfort level. I heard an initial comfort level.
Not feeling comfortable.
Also, I know is, what's that?
Oh, I'm comfortable now.
Good.
You know, when you first brought the sheet out, I definitely was a little comfortable with it, the $6,000 at first, and trying to even work my way up to it, you know, but no, I feel good about it. And with Jason telling me what he's doing and all that, absolutely feel 100% comfortable with everything. And Monday, I'm meeting with a doctor at noon that my girlfriend's dad set up, so he's more of like a naturopath and all that stuff, so he's got high-level clients and stuff, so.
Meeting with him for what purpose?
Talking about this. So I'm super stoked, you know, and
but for him to be a client?
Meeting.
For the doctor to be a client?
You know, I'm not sure I'm going to go into that. Like, not as a client necessarily, but talking about what I do, so, and get his patients and all that stuff for referrals. And I was wondering if I go there for the meeting, if I start trying to get him as a client first, or just tell my spiel about this and, you know.
Well, why should he give you clients? But what's in it for him? Why should he give you clients?
Yeah. He wants to get them healed.
Isn't that what he does?
What's that?
Isn't that what he does? He's a naturopath. Why would he give them to you?
Well, he puts them on supplements and all that stuff. He doesn't have them on a regular workout regimen or nutrition or anything like that. So he really
doesn't
has no...
In him giving them supplements, doesn't he believe that's a nutritional regimen?
Well, he's missing a big piece of the puzzle.
Does he believe that?
I'm going to have that hour to convince him. So going with the glucose and the diabetes that you were just bringing up is a great way to talk to him about that.
Well, he's a naturopath, so he's going to be a lot more evolved. He believes the body can heal itself. if you do a little reading on Paracelsus, so I mentioned on a prior call, if not a couple of prior calls, he was sort of the first pharmacist, but he's really the doctor, botanist, mineralist, the homeopath, who identified that things that come from rocks, minerals, like zinc, and things that come from plants can be brought to their essence and be used to heal a human body. And if you do a little bit of reading, just a little bit of reading on Paracelsus' beliefs, that will align you with a naturopath in terms of your dialogue. Because the naturopath will believe that he is providing a comprehensive nutrition program. I mean, if he isn't, he's outside of the boundaries of what he learned in school. So, you know, don't make the assumption that he thinks he needs a personal trainer to step in. So, you know, Patrick, if you're meeting him because you're being introduced, I would start the conversation purely as what do you do? And then when you're talking about what you do, I wouldn't just limit it to a personal trainer. I would say something like, you know, so many personal trainers are stuck in just the simple exercise and nutrition, but they fail to recognize the balance between stress load and recovery. And that's one of the things I do. The other thing they fail to do is they fail to recognize the body is made up of systems, which I'm sure that you treat all the time, but the systems work in harmony. And, you know, you could listen to the recording of this call and write that down if you want. But if he hears that language, he'll at least connect with you. You don't want to confront him. You don't want to go, you're not getting people well, so I need to heal them. But that's the kind of dialogue that brings connection. That's the kind of dialogue where he's going to go, wow, this guy's, you know, something. He's more than just a personal trainer. And then you can get into the questions. You know, hey, tell me some of the people you deal with. You know, are you seeing a lot of type 2 diabetes? You know, what do you do for them? I don't know that you go with a specific agenda other than to meet him and sort of feel it out. Because he might tell you he has no energy. I'm just saying, you don't know. So when you ask, should you try to get him as a client, again, you have to see what he reveals.
Right.
You know, he might kind of grab his gut and go, well, you know what, I'm 50 years old now. It's harder to get rid of this, you know. My cholesterol is great, but I can't get rid of this. And you might go, well, you know what, let me work with you for a while. So I don't think you should go in there coming with any sort of an anticipated confrontation where you're going to go, I'm a healer and I can fill in the gaps where you're not doing, because he believes he's doing it. You got to ask him the question, you know? And then when he says, well, yeah, I'm seeing a tremendous amount of not only type 2 diabetes, but hypothyroidism. Every woman who comes into my office, even if she didn't know it, is hypothyroid. And you go, are you getting them well? And he goes, well, I'm getting them off their medications, but they're not all getting them well. And then you can say, what if we work together to try to get them well? You know, there's so many possibilities here. That I just think you have to go with a really open mind, but enough ammunition so whichever direction it takes, you can stay aligned in the conversation. Does anybody else have anything they want to share with Patrick in line with that?
Well, I think the major thing, Phil, is he has to differentiate himself from every other personal trainer that, you know, lifting weights and putting things down or doing, you know, the different classes that people are doing out there. I think when we walk in and we start to talk to them right off about the 6-point triangle, you know, I actually talk about it as a 9-point. I talk about the synergy triangle. I say every trainer is going to talk about the synergy triangle. Here's what differentiates our program is that we understand and we address these principles. And I think you're addressing these principles, what they're doing, and I'd like to see what I can do for you. I mean, I think the guys, you're not going to educate them, but the fact what you can educate them to is how far above other trainers you are. I think that was a major difference. When I first started to get the first docs to come to my presentation and they started to understand that it wasn't just about how hard a workout we gave. It's about how we evaluated through the intake where people were, and then the docs started seeing their patients come back to them improving. You know, we on Monday, I have my appointment for my third $6,000 program. You know,
nice.
So,
and what are they getting for
$6,000? Well, in my case, I use the education process of using with them for the live. I teach them the live, so they're doing that every day. I'm with them one day a week on that, and then I also continue to do a one day a week one-on-one program if they feel they can't stick by our traditional part, or I have them where they come in.
For how many weeks?
For 10.
Good. Very good. Excellent. All right. So, yeah, Patrick, I would do a little homework before you just go in, you know, assuming that he's going to want to give you patience.
Oh,
because
yeah.
my sense is he won't, you know, unless you lay the right groundwork.
Yep. Okay.
Right? I mean, just think about it. If somebody came to you and they were, they ran a CrossFit, you know, and they go, hey, Patrick, let's have lunch, and you have lunch, and they go, hey, I was thinking maybe you'd give me your clients. You'd go, mm-hmm. Why? Well, you know, because I can do the things you can't. I get people to go for their personal best. You'd go, well, no, I've already got that covered, right? So, you know, be
exactly.
careful that you don't go with the idea that he just wants to give you patience. So it's a good idea to have the meeting. Just
cool.
go with an open mind and a bit of a plan.
Absolutely, we'll
good?
Do. Cool.
All right, so there are a couple of these principles I want to highlight or point to. And I want to start with the first one, because I think the worst question now, it wasn't always the worst question, but the worst question now for a personal trainer to ask somebody is, what are your fitness goals? Now, I'll tell you, when I started in this industry, I was given a questionnaire. It was called the Road to Fitness. It looked like a game board. And you had little spaces where you'd ask some questions and write in the answers. And really, the answers were all used to close them. So, you know, it looked like a game, but really it was a hardcore closing system. And we would always ask that question, what is your fitness goal? And almost always they would say, lose weight. Or get in shape. And it really meant nothing. Now, it didn't take me long to figure out that if I'm going to really get any meat, I have to ask them, what does that mean? But the problem is, we're still asking them about a fitness goal. And what I learned over years is, not everybody has a fitness goal beyond way less on the scale. They don't even know how to construct a fitness goal. They just think they want to weigh less. They think life will be better if they weigh less. And, you know, a lot of trainers will break it down into, you want to lose weight, do you want to gain weight, do you want more energy? But how does that really help us, other than in closing? So the better question is, and you guys have heard me use this, and I've shared it with you and taught it to you in different formats, how would life be different 6 months from now if you get everything you want out of this relationship? That's a beautiful question, because you're not pigeonholing them. You're not saying, I want you to think fitness, because sometimes they don't even think fitness. But how would life be different 6 months from now if you get everything you want out of this relationship? I'll be closer to my daughter. Now, you're not going to get that answer if you ask, what is your fitness goal? And they say, lose weight. What will life be like 6 months from now if you get everything you want out of this relationship? I won't need chemotherapy anymore. Oh, now there's a dialogue that needs to take place, right? What will life be like 6 months from now if you continue to move in the direction you've been moving in? I won't be so depressed, and I'll get back with my ex-wife. These are answers. You know, these are the kind of answers that really guide you toward helping somebody feel good, because that's ultimately what we want. So really what we're asking for is a wish. And the problem with a wish is it sounds fairy tale-like. It sounds, you know, like Aladdin and the lamp. Just make a wish. And I might have told you guys a story, and if I didn't, I won't tell you now, but I was in a sushi bar in Beverly Hills, and I met a very grumpy man. And it got me thinking in this direction about when we make a wish, and what is our potential, and can we truly wish ourselves to an outcome, and all of it has to do with our attitude. And then the following day, or a couple of days later, I revealed some notes from a seminar, and I found this term, subconscious habitation. That we can get a thought to literally move into our subconscious, to live in our subconscious. So when we wish, I created this acronym. When we wish, if we want the wish to really become an outcome, we have to will it. This is our true willpower. Willpower is not eating the donut. This is true willpower. Is take the thing you most want and believe it. Is it easy? No. But this is the power of will. Take the thing you most want and will it so it moves into your subconscious. So it habitates in your subconscious. Because when you do that, you completely change the human potential. Somebody who believes that it's better to work out and keep smoking than not work out and keep smoking is really going to be very limited in the outcome they get. Somebody who has the belief working out can replace smoking and better my life, just think of how different the outcome will be because we change the belief. This is the mind part. But I always say, the mind part is the greatest determinant of how far somebody goes with a program. And this is why in week two, I spent a lot of time talking about mindset, and I teach about the EEM and the PFC and the nucleus accumbens. This is why. And that's in here too. But we want people to understand, if you're going to embark on a program, the outcome is up to you. Somebody can't just show up and say, hey, Jason, get me fit. You're going to have to say no. I can't get you fit. But I can partner with you, but you've got to do your part. What, show up for the workouts? Well, that's part of it, but your part is you got to get clear on what's going to happen. You got to come up with an outcome. I'm not working with you frivolously. I'm working with you to get you to change. We got a transgenesis going on here. We're bringing you to a whole new place. But you've got to tell me what is the want, what is the deepest desire, what is the wish. And then I'm going to work with you by giving you evidence and giving you principles so you know beyond all doubt that this want is in your future. Tasa, you said Patrick has to establish he's different than all personal trainers. If you just do this and nothing else, you're different than all personal trainers. This is the first principle because I believe it is the pivotal piece to move them forward. Everything else is important. But without this one, I don't know that we thrill people. So, you know, it does seem a little intangible, but later when we talk about the EEM and the PFC, it makes sense because we're talking about mindset. So willpower is not the ability to get out of bed and get to your workout when the alarm says, you know, wait 10 more minutes and snooze. It is the result of accessing within you the power to convert a want into a thought that repeats, that lives as a program running over and over and over again beneath the conscious level. So the acronym is Will into Subconscious Habitation. I believe that is hugely powerful in taking on a new client. If you want to separate yourself from any other trainer or certainly any other health practitioner, you get somebody who is told that they're hypothyroid and depressed, and you give them this. You go, listen, if you want to tell me the labels you were given and allow those to be your identity, I'm going to cover my ears. I don't want to talk about the labels you were given. You know why? I don't believe them. Unless you do. And if you do, I can't help you. So let's start with this. You can wish them away. Sounds crazy, I know, but let me explain what I mean. And when you do this, you lift somebody's mindset instantly to a new place, and it changes the entire makeup, the entire relationship of the corners of the triangles. Any thoughts on that? Are you guys comfortable with it? Would you be comfortable sharing it, or does it sound a little too weird and out there?
I love it. I think it's good. I use it all the time.
Also, I want to develop a lexicon, a sort of vocabulary that we all use that other people don't use because it kind of identifies us, and one of them is energy disruptors. So whenever we talk about things like processed and bleached carbohydrates and simple sugars, we should refer to them as energy disruptors because that's exactly what they do. And here's the interesting further part of the description. You're eating them believing they give you energy, when the truth is they eat your energy. They consume your energy. What you are consuming consumes your energy. It's hard to give up sugar. Of course it's hard to give up sugar. You created a chemical addiction, but you know what's even harder? To live the rest of your life with your food eating your energy. That's harder. There's a perspective for somebody to sit with. You're going to tell me you have no energy today? I guarantee this. Keep eating the way you're eating. You'll have no energy on Thursday. And you'll have no energy a week from Tuesday, and you'll have no energy 2 months from today. You know why? Because the food you're eating is eating your energy. Here's what I can gift you with. We can give you your energy. You just got to change what you eat. And you'll go through 3 difficult days, but I'm going to coach you through it. As long as you are consuming energy disruptors, you are running the programs that will eat your energy and make you fatter. So it's just a pretty good addition to the lexicon, because we're calling it what it is. You know, when you go, don't eat sugars, there is an association for sugar that is pleasure, right? So we're going, don't eat what you love. My grandmother, when she was a child, her parents in Europe used to hold a sugar cube in their teeth and drink tea. So on the table was always sugar, and they would have a cup of tea, and they wouldn't put the sugar in the tea. They'd literally hold it in their teeth because it would, like, melt, you know, into their mouth. I think they all had false teeth by the time they were 40. I'm not kidding. So, you know, we talk about sugar, and people love sugar so much because it tastes really good, and it gives us pleasure, and it gives us dopamine. So when we say to somebody, give up sugar, of course they go, that's really hard. But give up the monster that's eating your energy? Maybe that's worth a second look. Okay, so a term that I want you guys to get comfortable with. The lymphatic system is something that is really simple to activate. Those of you who are using the LIVE program, you know it's as simple as palpating the lumbar trunks. But it's something that no fitness professionals incorporate or talk about. And it is a really important piece of the immune system. What I love about pointing out the simplicity of the lymphatic system is in the first week, everybody will feel better if they're coming from that place where they're sedentary and their lymph is literally sludge. By simply moving it, they feel better. Their energy is better. Their mood is better. And it makes sense because they've gotten rid of debris and dead bacteria and dead cells. They've moved it out of their body. It's the simplest detox in the world. I want us all to start to refer to the type of movement we incorporate as bio-movement. You haven't heard that term before? Let's use it. It is moving the body during exercise in line with the human body's innate architecture. People go, is that functional exercise? It may or may not be, because functional exercise really means we're giving somebody an exercise regimen that aligns with their functional need in the world. So clearly an athlete would have a different functional need than somebody who's not an athlete. You know, somebody whose job is to load baggage out of the airplane and put it on the conveyor belt would have a very different functional need than somebody who's a toll collector. But biomovement applies to the human. So all of the movements that we are utilizing are in fact biomovements. We are not asking anybody to do anything that goes against or hinders the optimal movement of the human skeletal or muscular system. Number 7 is a really, and they're all important. I mean, I'm skipping over just because you know all of these, but just in terms of the lexicon, the language, and how we share it, I want you guys to feel comfortable with it. So this is really a very, very important explanation. Balance is natural. balance is a word that people use in describing their lifestyle. They go, well, you know what, I'm busy at work, but I don't really have a social life. I'm not balanced. I'm really successful financially, but I don't spend enough time with my kids. You know, I'm not balanced. But when we look at balance in nature, it really is amazing. You know, grass dies, grass grows. It really is amazing. So when we think of the body as an organism that maintains balance, that balance is innate. And in here, I just gave a very simple example. You overheat, you sweat. We don't think about that. We don't think, let's open up our pores. But it's just this innate, amazing ability to maintain balance. In a state of health, we eat, we produce leptin, we feel satiated. So when appetite gets out of control, it is an imbalance that we created, because balance is natural. So when somebody overtrains, they were in balance until they screwed it up. This is really important, because if we realize that balance is natural, then we don't have to be magicians or surgeons to restore balance. We just have to understand the systems enough to recognize there are opposing forces. There is stress, load, and recovery. And if we can work to get people back into balance, then we work to get people back into health. Any thoughts on any of the few that I've mentioned? No thoughts at all? Numbness? Am I kind of Charlie Brown's teaching right now? Yeah?
No, I'm with you, man.
All right, then once we understand that, number 8 says it all. The balance between stress, load, and recovery is the most important element of the perpetuation of health through physical exercise. Do doctors consider that? No. Sometimes? No. Once in a while? No. So let's reframe that. The doctor is not considering the most important element of the perpetuation of health through physical intervention. Does this give us value? Yeah. You could read through the ones about life force and form your opinions and comfort level. I think they're pretty generic. Number 16, vitally important. Doctors don't know this, but it's very teachable, and it's also documentable, and it's probably one of the most important elements of reversing inflammation through exercise. Parasympathetic recovery is trainable. Sounds a little contradictory, because how could we say rest is trainable? But it is. We've learned to do it. Because we are rebalancing the nervous system by throwing a super high stimulation at the body, but for only 12 seconds, forcing it to do its natural thing, try to return to homeostasis. And the only way it could do that is to activate the parasympathetic recovery system. So the more often we do it, the more efficient it becomes. Thus, we can train recovery. Number 20 is another really important one. Fat is active. Because we've always been told, and I hear trainers say this all the time, muscle is metabolically active, fat just sits there. And to a very simplified degree, if we're talking about subcutaneous fat and looking at caloric burn, we can make a case for that. But when we look at hormonally active, fat is busy. Fat cells also create cytokines, which are the drivers of inflammation, which is the root cause of all disease. So to say that fat just sits there is not true, because the more fat somebody accumulates, the more they move along the disease continuum, the more that fat will harm them. It's not just sitting there anymore. And if we look at 22, visceral fat, the fat around the organs, is the rogue invader. It's working hard to make sure it stays where it's at and it brings its friends. Number 27 is another important one, because everybody has heard the word cleansing and they go, I'm on a juice cleanse. I bought a 8-week colon cleanse. Takes me through different levels. Isagenics calls their program a cleanse. I've told you guys, I'm a fan of Isagenics, but I certainly don't use that term in that way. There are people who will do a gallbladder cleanse because a friend told them to. Now, is that bad? No, not if they have a gallbladder issue. It's probably valuable. But the problem is, why do most people do these cleanses? What do they think the outcome will be?
Fat loss.
Weight loss, yeah.
Yep.
So if we're really going to cleanse for health and to better metabolism and better prepare the body to stay lean and functional, then we don't have to cleanse a system or an organ. We have to cleanse the gut and the cell. And we do that by incorporating the right exercise strategy with the right nutritional strategy. Number 34 is also a departure if you look at my writings from more than 10 years ago, because I used to just say supplements are the extra, and I can't say that anymore. I can't say that anymore, because what has happened to our food supply over the last decade is criminal. And unless you live in Marin County, California, where you're actually growing things and eating from the land, you have your own farm where you're raising lamb, you're going to be deficient in enzymes. Not deficient where you're going to die, but in terms of you being able to maintain optimal health. So I don't want to say everybody needs to take supplements, but I will say now supplements have their place. No longer in my mind are they purely an option if you're looking for optimal health, because when you live in a world where environmental factors and stressors drive continuous oxidation, no supplement by itself will fix it. But we are very limited in the complexity of the healing power of food. If we're truly striving to create natural balance so that we can manage our own oxidation, we probably need some nutritional support if we're going to exercise. That doesn't mean you have to buy a whole bunch of supplements, but it does mean that if you really want to be fit and healthy and live an optimal life in terms of living at your maximum potential, it's probably best to think that most should come from food, but supplements are a good idea, as long as it's supplementing the food you eat for better nutrition.
You're speaking more towards digestive enzymes and probiotics or bone broth?
I would say those are the two biggies that we're really going to have trouble getting from food if we want optimal utilization of the foods we eat. Yes, enzymes and probiotics.
Okay.
You know, fermented foods are not really staples in the American diet. I mean, most people don't really like them, right? I mean, most people are not getting up and eating sauerkraut for breakfast. So being that we are facing dysbiosis in most cases, it's hard for us to get enough probiotics from food to maintain balance. So I do think supplementing with a probiotic is a good idea. We certainly are not going to get it from yogurt, commercial yogurt anyway. And, you know, ditto for enzymes. I mean, we can really start to go very high in the fruits and some of the vegetables that are high in enzymes, but it's not realistic for most people. So, yes, those two. I would also add in antioxidants. I don't want to tell everybody they need to take certain things, but many people will take vitamin C and vitamin E. And part of the challenge there is they're very limited because they really don't go into the cell. So they're scavenging what's in the blood, but in the act of lending an electron to the free radical, which is what they do, they create additional free radicals. So it's an imperfect way of scavenging free radicals. If we're really going to handle it as the body was intended to handle it, I would say any adult over 35 years old or anybody who has suffered any digestive issue, whether it's a gluten intolerance, a dairy intolerance, a Crohn's disease or something worse, absolutely needs to be aware of their glutathione levels, which is why, and you guys have heard me say before, I think for most Americans dealing with dysbiosis, N-acetylcysteine is a really important supplement. And in order for N-acetylcysteine to optimize glutathione levels, it's best to also take alpha-lipoic acid. Now, I want to be really careful here, because when you say this to your clients, they run and they buy those things and they think they're, you know, all of a sudden going to make a huge difference. They're protective at best. So they're not the kind of things that people take and they go, whoa, I look better and I feel better. But if we're really shooting for optimal health and we're looking to create a body that doesn't need medical intervention, for my money, those supplements are worth it. Jason, does that help? Or did I confuse things more? Still here? All right, so I'm going to leave it at that. But I do want you guys to carefully look at these, and I want you to think of these in different ways. You know, one is, can you become versed enough in them to use anyone with equal confidence? To not feel like, oh, I'm going to cringe because I'm going to talk about the spirit ones. Then I want you to look at it from the perspective of a doctor. And I want you to think of how far outside the medical paradigm these are, but how beneficial they would be if you can get a doctor to align with you just on these principles and nothing else. And then selectively, I want you to just, in conversation, you know, share them with your clients as you feel is valuable. But as I develop this Healer Nation, you know, this kind of becomes the foundation. And I really do believe as every question comes up, you're going to find the foundation of the answer within these 42 principles. All right, any thoughts, comments, questions on anything at all? I know we covered a lot. And I do want you guys to feel comfortable over the next few weeks. If you want to, on the board, just ask about any one of these or, you know, entertain a conversation about them, I want you to. I want you to become very, very versed in these as if this is the next level of your education. Most of them are not new to you, but working them into your lexicon so they just become a part of your vocabulary, you know, it's going to be a bit of a study and a practice.
I'm excited to read through them this weekend because I got through like three this afternoon in an hour just really pondering them. So I'm excited to go through them.
Good. Pondering is good. And then speak them. Don't just ponder. Ponder and speak. April, any thoughts?
I've been reading through all of this, and I'm liking that the language, and definitely seeing places where I need to work on myself with, and excited to use this with the clients that I have and will have.
Good. And as you're getting more into this world of going beyond the subconscious and the theta state, and learning about energy healing and the chakras, can you see that aligning too? Because I've constructed this in such a way that it is not, you know, normal and abnormal or what's weird and what's not. The idea is if somebody is getting people well, they're using these principles, regardless of the modality. If they're getting somebody well through a specific type of psychology, they're using these principles. So do you see it connecting to kind of your more recent study?
Yeah, absolutely. And a lot of like the triangles, there's other triangles yeah, that are in the other studies that I'm. So it's really neat to see how it's all coming together.
Yeah, the triangle becomes really significant when you start to dig into deep spiritual stuff, right? Like the Merkaba.
Yep. The Merkaba, definitely.
Yep.
Yeah, we've been studying that. So
good.
Yeah, and the whole thing about being a healer nation, it was part of the email that I had sent out earlier. It was really a wow experience because it's not just one person. It's not just the people in the spirit world. It's everybody. So
it is, and I think you'll soon get to a point where you're able to discern. Because there are people in the what you're calling the spirit world who are completely bonkers and out of their mind.
Yeah.
So because that's kind of an easy retreat to, you know, nobody understands me, but, you know, Jesus visited me last night in my bedroom and told me about this. So they go into a spirit place where they can have these communications. Now, I'm not saying whatever Jesus told them is not true, but what I've seen sometimes is when people confuse what spirit is saying with what the world is bringing them, they retreat into a spirit place and lose touch with the world. And the trick is finding that balance. We are spiritual beings in physical bodies, right?
Yep.
So that's why I'm saying you got to be careful sometimes, because there are people who will lead you to a place. I think I told you about a woman who I met who went to can't think of the name of the healing center in California, and she was a teacher, and she left to go learn to meditate, and she's been there for 9 years. And it's it's a complete absence of the physical world. She's left the physical world. She has no relationship. She has no job. She just finds that retreat. You know, do monks have virtue in that? Probably they do, because they're doing it with a cause. They're doing it with a purpose. But you got to be careful, because when it comes to people making claims among a desperate population, I've seen people do a lot of weird things, whether they're talking to angels or bringing in crystals or drawing circles on the ground. So you will get good, and you're probably already developing a sense of this, of what's legit and what is whacked out. Because even the whacked out, they're going to have little hints of something you've heard or learned. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, absolutely.
And that's why, like I'm saying, that sometimes they'll throw in a little religion. So you go, oh, well, this must be real. But if they take you so far into the spirit place, if they start channeling, believe me, I've seen it all. So just be careful as you go there to be very discerning, because spiritual healing is absolutely 1,000% real. Prayer, absolutely 1,000% works.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But because not everybody is adept at knowing the difference between what is legitimate and what is some wacko making a crazy claim, because this becomes important as we develop a platform so that we never fall into that space where people can look at us and go, oh, that's crazy stuff. Right?
Right.
Good.
Yep.
Are you enjoying the Theta lessons you're learning?
I have the workshop this weekend, so it'll be 15 hours to know more about that. But the shaman journeying is similar to Theta.
Good.
Theta healing as well.
Mm-hmm. All right, I think I said to you in an email, I really get a sense like you're finding your place, and I still feel that. Do you feel that?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm
okay.
Feeling really comfortable with this. And
beautiful.
And that what I've been doing, this personal training and the food and nutrition is still key. So it doesn't,
of course.
It doesn't just detract from that.
Oh, no.
I'm able to offer this to other people and not feel like I have to give up personal training yet.
Right, April, and this is what I was trying to say to you, is when you were saying, I don't feel like I should be a personal trainer, what you were saying is, I feel limited by being a personal trainer. But when you realize that we're dealing with every point of the triangle, you could be the greatest personal trainer in the world who never trains a client, you know, or selectively trains clients, because you have so many different tools.
Right.
And that's what I feel like you're becoming, right? You're not you're not limited by being a personal trainer now. It's kind of opened the door to expand to something greater.
Exactly, yeah.
Good.
Yeah.
Okay, anyone else? Any thoughts, comments, questions about anything at all? All right, use the rate sheet. Ask for what you deserve. Tony, kill that monster. Until we speak again, be better, everybody. Have a great weekend. Bye-bye.
Thanks.